Did you just start recording the recorder?
Yep, I did. Now you're recording to me asking, will be recorded henceforth.
Okay, so welcome to Friday, Nacht 20B. What's going on today is sort of outlined on the board here. On Wednesday, there's going to be the second midterm. So just a reminder, that's not the coming Wednesday, it's Wednesday, March 1st, so it's still a while away. Second, today I'm going to give you a few examples that illustrate what improper integrals are. These are integrals from, say, minus infinity to zero of a function, or integrals where the function might have a pole at some point in the domain of integration. Monday, you'll have a lot of fun because it's cousins of the holiday. And next, on Wednesday, we'll talk about sequences. So we're going to do sequences in a series in this class. Another important thing today is that there's a quiz today, which will consist of two homework problems. Okay. So, any questions before we begin with the lecture about improper integrals? Any questions at all about anything? So, a student right before class asked me a question about the homework, and I think I'll briefly share the answer with everyone here because it's pretty relevant, and a lot of people have been asking me this sort of question in email. So the question is about the supplement problem 4, and the problem is x cubed plus, to find the partial fraction decomposition of x cubed plus 2 over x squared plus 1, x squared plus 4. And briefly, for this particular one, I think it's best because there are, the partial fraction will look like this, a over x plus bx plus c over x squared plus 1 plus dx plus b over x squared plus 4. Notice that there are so many variables that if you just use the book method or you substitute in a bunch of random values without thinking, you end up with a linear system with 4 unknowns, or 5. I mean, you can easily figure out what A is, but finding B, C, D, and E, you end up with a linear system in 4 unknowns. And that's something that you could certainly solve if you knew a lot of linear algebra, but it's kind of tedious to do if you don't know a good way of setting it up. In fact, even if you know a lot of linear algebra, it's tedious. In this particular case, it really is a good idea to use complex numbers. It makes it vastly easier, and it does so in two ways. So I'm going to show you how to find B and C really, really easily using complex numbers. So a root on the left-hand side here is I, and I'm just going to substitute in I and use just that one substitution to find both B and C. So multiply both sides by x squared plus 1. And you get x cubed plus 2 over x squared plus 4 is equal to a over x times x squared plus 1 plus bx plus c plus dx plus e over x squared plus 4 times x squared plus 1. Is there a question? So now substitute I in both sides. On the left-hand side, you simply get I cubed plus 2 over I times I squared plus 4. And on the right-hand side, you get 0, which is easy to compute, plus B times I plus C plus, what do you get here? What's this big expression if you evaluate it at I? 0. Excellent. 0. So now all you need to do is simplify this expression on the left, and its real and imaginary parts will allow you to immediately read off what B and C are. So simplifying this thing on the left, I squared is minus 1, therefore I cubed is minus I plus 2. And then on the bottom you have an I squared here, which is minus 1, so this is I times 3. So. And multiplying top and bottom by the complex conjugate, this is minus I plus 2 times minus 3 times I divided by 9, and that's, so I squared is minus 1, so we have minus 3 minus 6 I over 9. And this is equal to minus a third minus 2 thirds I. Okay? And now look, on the left-hand side here, you have minus third, minus two-thirds I, and over here you have BI plus C. B and C are real numbers. So what is C, for example?
One-third.
Oops. Minus a third. Good. And what is B? What is B equal to?
Negative
two-thirds. So you see, I'm now done, I found B and C. And you could just as easily find D and E.
So you just sub in?
Yeah, that's it. All you have to do, you don't have to do any linear systems or anything. If you have a lot of variables, and these denominators have complex roots, complex numbers really do make things a lot easier. Though, I admit, you do a bit of arithmetic right here, but even then, this isn't that bad. If you're careful with what you're doing, it's not that bad. And you can always double check your work at the end. Questions?
Yeah. All right, I think at the very last step, how did you decide what B and C were
okay.
At the very end?
I'm going to take the two sides of equality, and this is a crucial trick, and I'm going to write it over here. Minus a third minus two thirds times I is equal to, you'll permit me to switch the order, C plus BI. Now, it's a fact that if you have two complex numbers that are equal, then the real parts are equal and the imaginary parts are equal. So this tells me that minus a third is equal to C, and minus two thirds is equal to B.
Okay?
It's a nice trick. I don't know if it's explained in the book. I just realized it when I was answering her question in the back, but it makes it so you only have to do a total of 3 easy substitutions in order to find all of these variables. Okay, a lot of people asked me an email about this problem, so I thought it was worth mentioning. Any questions?
So if you say you assume that's not going to be on the quiz today.
That's a safe assumption. So, improper integrals. Does anybody know what an improper integral is? Does anybody else know what an improper integral is? What's an improper integral? For example? Could be that. I mean, that's an example of an improper integral. When you integrate, so far, I've only defined the notion of integration when you integrate from A to B, f of x, dx, where f is a continuous function on the interval from A to B. But you can make sense of integration if you're careful, and there are some really interesting subtleties that come up. But you can make sense of integration when one of the endpoints is, say, minus infinity or plus infinity. So you can make sense of this, you can make sense of this, and you can even make sense of integrating when the function blows up at a point, when the function has a pole, when it isn't continuous here. So you can make sense of something really bad where it isn't even defined at some point. So I'll just illustrate that by drawing a picture. Maybe you have a function like this that blows up somehow. It might still make sense to compute an integral from here to there on this function.
Okay, that's what improper integration is about. It's about making sense of integrals in a little bit more general context than you've seen so far. Just as motivation, let me quote the first sentence of Brian Conrad's paper on impossibility theorems for elementary integration. So it starts out, the central limit theorem, which is the main theorem in probability theory, assigns a special significance to the following function. Capital phi of x equals 1 over square root of 2 pi integral from minus infinity to x e to the minus u squared u du. So this is a function that is what?
Phi u.
It's just a typo, I think. It's just a typo, sorry. Right over, I guess. Good. So here's a function. What does this mean? What is the meaning of integrating from minus infinity to x? I mean, it turns out this is an incredibly important function in all of probability, hence in a lot of your daily life. It gives you essentially the area under the Gaussian bell curve. So it's very relevant. What does this mean? Here's what it means. It's very noisy. I feel uncomfortable talking with so many people talking. I'm sorry. So either stop talking or come back when the quiz starts. I don't want to be, it's just I feel uncomfortable. So 1 over root 2 pi, this is, you define this improper integral to be the limit as t goes to, say, minus infinity of 1 over root 2 pi integral from t to x e to the minus u squared du. So this is something we've already defined in the course. And limits are something that you know about. So this makes sense. Okay? And you can do this sort of thing in all these other cases that I wrote down. For example, here, it's the same thing. You define the integral from minus infinity to b of f of x dx to be the limit as t goes to minus infinity of the individual integrals, each of which is a usual real number, from t to b. Okay? And similarly with going from something to infinity. Let me show you an explicit example of this. So here's one example. Let's compute integral from 0 to infinity e to the minus x dx. And this is the sort of thing that you're supposed to be doing. This is the sort of thing you might see on an exam. What is this? So here's the definition. It's by definition the limit as t goes to infinity of integral from 0 to t e to the minus x dx. And now you can really do it. This is the limit as t goes to infinity of, and now e to the minus x, an antiderivative of that is minus e to the minus x. And we'll evaluate from 0 to t. And this is limit as t goes to infinity of, let's see, minus e to the minus t minus e to the minus 0. And that's the limit as, well, let's just look at it. This is going to go to 0 as t goes to infinity. And this is plus 1, so the answer is plus 1. Okay? And if you think about it, well, let's think about the graph of e to the minus x. It's going to, when x is equal to 0, it's equal to e to the 0, which is 1, and then it goes down really, really quickly. And what we've just done is we've computed the limit of the areas of this, you know, little of sort of going from 0 to t and computing the area under here. So this integral from 0 to infinity, it really is the area if you include this entire little tiny thing. So amazingly, even though this goes out forever to the right and never quite gets to the x-axis, there's still a finite area, and that area is equal to 1. It's kind of amazing. But if you were to come up with better and better approximations for the area of this curve, you would get closer and closer to 1, and this limit is in fact equal to 1. So
So that's almost everything you need to know about improper integration. It's just a definition when you have one endpoint, you need infinity of the other. But there's another subtlety, which is this issue with integrating a function when it blows up at some point, and another issue with integrating, say, from minus infinity to infinity. That's another thing you might consider doing. Then it's kind of funny, because which limit do you take? It depends a lot on how you set things up to what answer you would get. So it might not, there might be a serious issue with meaning. So here's another example. What does it mean to consider the integral from minus infinity to infinity of 1 over 1 plus x squared dx? So here, what this means is you take and break it up into two separate integrals, and then take the limits separately. So here, this is by definition the integral from minus infinity to 0, 1 over 1 plus x squared dx, plus the integral from 0 to infinity, 1 over 1 plus x squared dx. And each of these I've already defined for you over there. This one is the limit as t goes to minus infinity of integral from t to 0, 1 over 1 plus x squared dx, plus the limit as, say, s goes to infinity of the integral from 0 to s, whatever 1 plus x squared dx. And I chose the 0 completely arbitrarily. If it was 1 or something else, just turns out the integral comes out nicely if you choose 0. So that's the meaning of this. And you could compute each of these in terms of arc sine if you want. And you end up getting pi over 2. So, not in terms of arc sine, but in terms of arc tangent. You end up getting pi. Okay, so that's an example where you have two endpoints that are arbitrary, that are infinity. Okay, here's an interesting one. So what if you take the integral from minus infinity to infinity of x dx? What does that mean? So on the one hand, if you graph this, the signed area probably should be thought of as 0. I mean, here's what the graph looks like. Oops, I missed. So that's the graph of y equals x, or f of x equals x. And the area, the signed area, it's infinite this way and infinite that way, but the signed area, which I wanted the wrong direction here, looks kind of like it would cancel out and give you 0. But what if you started, that's a reasonable thing to say, but the way you define, at least in this class, an improper integral, is you break it up into sub-intervals where you only have something going wrong at most one point, and then you take a limit. And if you do that for this one, you run into trouble, and here's what happens. So let's take this integral, break it up into two things. So this is, by definition, the limit as t goes to minus infinity, integral from t to 0 x dx, plus the limit as s goes to infinity, integral from 0 to s x dx. And you can figure out what each of these are, of course. This one is the limit as t goes to minus infinity of 1 over 2 x squared evaluated from t to 0, plus limit as s goes to infinity of the same thing, but from 0 to s. And then this is, so here it's limit as t goes to minus infinity of minus a half t squared plus limit as s goes to infinity of this 1/2 s squared.
Okay, what is the limit as t goes to minus infinity of minus a half t squared? It doesn't exist. It's not some finite area. So, or it's not some finite number. So, this would be, I guess, plus infinity, and that would be that. But for the purposes of defining improper integrals, you would say this limit doesn't exist, and you wouldn't define this. You say that this integral doesn't converge. It isn't defined. And the reason is because when you break it up into two intervals in which you only have one thing going wrong on each interval, the limit doesn't exist in each case. All right, so let's see. There's one other important thing to illustrate, which I've mentioned a couple of times, and that's when your function blows up at a point in the range of integration. So what does this mean? Let's consider, say, the integral from minus 1 to 1 of 1 over let's say 1 over x dx. So first, you have to be a little suspicious because there's a point in the interval from minus 1 to 1 where this function isn't defined. Okay, so if this were defined, what would it mean? Well, there's one point where things go wrong. It blows up at 0. So this is, by definition, the limit as t approaches 0 from the negative side, integral minus 1 to t, 1 over x dx, plus limit as s approaches 0 from the positive side, integral from s to 1, 1 over x dx. Now you have to ask yourself, what are each of these limits? Do they exist or not? If they don't exist, then this improper integral doesn't converge. It's not defined. If they do exist, you get actual numbers. So you can do that just by, for any t that's strictly less than 0, you can try to evaluate this, and likewise for any s, and then you take each limit and see what happens. Okay? So first, what is the first integral limit? T goes to 0 from, this little thing right here means the zeros, the limit approaches 0 from below. And the antiderivative of 1 over x is log of x, or log of absolute value of x. And this is from...
Can't we just look at the second control, see if the log is 0, and avoid all this hard work?
Wait. So, the very definition of the improper integral is that you have to break up into two pieces where you have exactly one problem, or at most one problem on each piece. So in general, if you have this function on some big interval, you define the integral over that big interval of your function to be what you get if you break up interval into subintervals such that on each subinterval you only have one problem and then you take the limit. So the definition of integral from minus 1 to 1, 1 over x dx is what I've written here in terms of limits. Does that answer your question? I mean, the function is an odd function, so if it turns out that this is defined, the answer is going to be 0. The two are the same. But the question is it defined at all? So let's just figure out what happens with the first summit. So I'll leave this one off. So this is the limit as t goes to 0 of log of t, and that just blows up. So this limit blows up. So this is not defined. This improper integral is not defined. Let's try another one that looks similar that is defined. I mean, sometimes, amazingly enough, a function, though it goes to infinity, just kind of like over here, you can have a function that, say, blows up so quickly that, or somehow it blows up so close to 0 that the area still is finite. And then the thing will be defined. So here's an example like that.
It looks similar to what I just did, but I'm going to slightly modify the function 1 over x to make one that gets closer to the y-axis before blowing up. So consider the integral from minus 1 to 1, 1 over q root of x dx. Actually, so that we get something interesting, let's integrate from 0 to 1. Okay, this function, 1 over q root of x, it looks very similar to 1 over x, it's just that sort of more steeper. And it is not defined at 0, so this is an improper integral. And this integral is, by definition, the limit as t goes to 0 of the integral from t to 1 of 1 over q root of x, which I'll rewrite as x to the 1 third to make integration easier, dx. And this is equal to the limit as t goes to 0. Integral of x to the 1 third is... x to the minus 1 third. X to the minus 1 third has antiderivative. So add 1 to it, so you have 2 thirds. So 3 halves x to the 2 thirds. And this is evaluated from t to 1. Thank you. So this is the limit as t goes to 0 of 3 halves.
The whole thing, not just the numerator.
Wait, what's wrong?
Should you be adding logical? Never mind. Sorry.
Okay. So this is limit as t goes to 0, 3 halves minus 3 halves t to the 2 thirds. Okay, and now what is that equal to? What's the limit equal to? 3 halves. So it's kind of amazing. If you graph this, and do I have a graph here? No, I don't have a graph here, but if you graph this, unlike the case with 1 over x, where this area is infinite, this one looks more like this, and the area is in fact finite, and incredibly enough, the area is 3 halves. If you somehow approximate better and better the area as t goes to 0, you end up with 3 halves. So now you have a sense, you have a way to make sense of integrating where one of the endpoints or some point in an interval has bad properties for your function, or your function has bad properties at that point. Okay, any questions about this? So again, the quick one sentence summary, an improper integral is an integral where one of the endpoints is, or both endpoints are infinity, or an integral where your function isn't defined for some reason, possibly it has a pole, at some point in the interval, or at some number of points in the interval. And the definition of an improper integral is that you break up the interval that you're integrating over into sub-intervals so that on each sub-interval there's at most one point where something goes wrong, and then you take a limit. And that's the definition for this. It's very important you know the definition, because on an exam question like this, you might easily be able to answer the problem if only you knew the definition and knew what it was asking you. Okay? All right, any questions at all about that? All right, so I'm going to give the quiz now. Thank you.
student.